Special note. No one associated with the Dispatch Ajax podcast is a licensed mental health professional. Our presentation is solely for entertainment purposes. If you would like further skilled analysis of the fictional Batman psychology, do check out Robin Rosenberg's What's the Matter with the Batman? An Unauthorized Clinical Look Under the Mask of the Caped Crusader, or the podcast Popcorn Psychology. Both are fine analysis by trained psychologists and psychiatrists. Now, on with the fun. Dr. Leonard Sampson, clinical notes. A billionaire playboy who lost his parents has somehow dealt with this pain by dressing up like a flying rodent and beating up criminals at night. Honestly, I've seen much weirder. Mr. Bruce Wayne appears to be a keenly astute and intelligent individual. His body is as hard as his stony persona. He looks to be in his late 20s, and it is my understanding that he has only been engaging in his dalliances with superheroing for only a couple years. I would like to get a sense of his state of mind and provide some constructive assistance, if he so needs it. No one should live in pain and fear. Such things can push people over the edge. Hello, Mr. Wayne. My name is Sampson, but you can call me Leonard if it makes you feel more comfortable.
Call me Bruce.
Bruce, not a name you hear much nowadays. I do know one other Bruce. Professional curiosity, you might say. His case is an incredible one. A young man full of rage.
Well, that doesn't sound very professional. I thought this was about your interest in me.
Fair. Okay, for the sake of clarity, I refer to you as Mr. Wayne in my notes. I'm only reaching out to explore and engage in some discussion. The study that I hope you'll be a part of, as you know, is about successful people in society that rose up out of tragedy.
I'll be glad to answer any queries you have about me and my life, but if you've read any newspaper or lifestyle blog in the last 20 years, I'm sure you've read all about me. I mean, everything's out there. The facts aren't hard to find. I mean, I can't get a mustard stain on my suit without the Gazette airing my dirty laundry for the world to see.
For the sake of argument, let's assume I know nothing about you, Mr. Wayne. Public records are just words. They aren't you. Humor me, please.
I'm an open book.
Your reputation is that of a carefree man about town, even though you come from a background of great tragedy.
Well, the past is the past. We have to go on with our lives. Tragedies happen all around the world every day.
True. How does it make you feel knowing that tragedies such as yours happen to innocent people all the time? Do you feel connected to those horrors? Sympathetic? Empathetic?
It's sad. The state of the world, but I try to use whatever meager resources I have to make it better, at least materially, for such innocence as you describe.
Mr. Wayne, is meager the right word for your family's vast wealth or the breadth of activities you engage in? Your family famously owns huge swaths of property and has a lucrative defense contract with the United States military.
Which, since I took over as president and chairman, have paused, reevaluated, and terminated. To pursue more humanitarian efforts. The Renewal Fund is a great example. Our fresh water initiative in the Republic of Congo alone has provided...
That's not really why we're here today. I'm sorry, Mr. Wayne. I mean, no offense. I'm just trying to get a feel for your thoughts on what happened and open a dialogue about your method for processing your beginnings. Would that be okay with you? Now, I've read your company's press releases... But I want to know about you.
Sure thing.
Thank you, Mr. Wayne. Now, I understand that your parents were taken from you at an early age. Could you please tell me a bit about that?
You know, my parents were taken from me by a career criminal. By a man in unfortunate circumstances. A product of social inequity and the wealth gap. Driven to violence due to a corrupt system that doesn't have the best interests of its own public. Look, the Wayne Foundation has gone to great lengths in its philanthropic efforts to close these gaps and create a more egalitarian society, more in line with the founders of our city and our nation. People like my father, who believed in the best in people and the greatness.
Daddy issues.
I'm sorry, what did you say?
But isn't it fact that these inequities are a product of private business, corporate interest, and long-term wealth? Haven't we proven time and time again that these gaps are created by enormous industries like Wayne Enterprises?
My father invested in infrastructure. affordable housing, and technological innovation to help raise up those without capital and opportunity. But I'm not really here to discuss sociopolitics, so unless you want to change the course of your study, Mr. Sampson, I was under the impression that you wanted to know more about me.
I don't know how to separate your family's wealth and philanthropy from social politics, but point well taken. Considering the scandal and recently uncovered corruption in your city's political machinery, including the very police department that investigated the slaying of your parents, do you feel like your efforts have done enough to change the atmosphere that created the inequity-based crime that took your family? Would you say that your efforts, your activities, have gone far enough to change things for the better?
I do what I can with what I have.
Mr. Wayne has obvious symptoms of PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, recurrent memory, flashbacks, and nightmares of the trauma, his mental obsession with this stressor. Mr. Wayne appears to be dissociating into the memory, event, and reliving the moment. Trauma can be an immersive sensory experience. The body remembers. Thus, living in his parents' house probably has sights, sounds, and smells that trigger the thoughts of his parents, and thus, their unfortunate demise. Paired with living in the city surrounded by their names and deeds, just more triggering mechanisms. Is this all on purpose? We shall see. You've been a vocal and outspoken opponent of the death penalty. Considering the loss of your parents, where would you draw the line between justice and vengeance? Mr. Wayne?
I assume we're both professionals here, so let's just drop the charade. Doc.
Would you feel more comfortable if I just referred to you as the Batman?
No. Mr. Wayne is adequate.
Understood. Well, Mr. Wayne, I would like to explore some of your early life before you became a vigilante. Would that be okay with you?
Fine. I'll play your game.
It's not a game, Mr. Wayne. You're just not as opaque as you think you are. And I truly just want to know more about you and how you became all of the man you are today. As we briefly touched on before, your parents were taken away from you when you were quite young.
Well, if you already know what happened, why ask about it?
I want to get a sense of how this tragedy informed your formation of your, let's just say, current persona.
It's the past. Talking about it won't change it.
Do you think about that incident often?
Every day.
Would you say that you relive that incident in your mind?
It comes to me in flashes. Sometimes it lingers on the edges of awareness. Sometimes it just crashes into me.
Those waves come in flashbacks? Do they come to you in nightmares?
Both intense and affecting.
When these memories are triggered, do you feel lost in these moments and recollections?
They are my whole world.
Doctor's notes. Another symptom of post-traumatic stress disorder is hypervigilance. Constantly looking for threats, Bruce Wayne does this on a continual basis. But under his guise as the Batman, reframed into a tool that can be harnessed. I see your preoccupation with the door. Are you expecting someone?
I'm always expecting someone.
Is there a reason that you are so on guard?
Well, the real question is, why aren't you?
Mr. Wayne, this is a safe place. Nothing will happen to you under my watch.
That's what everyone feels right before violence.
Today, right now, it's not a moment for violence. Feel free to allow yourself the freedom to let go, here, now. Mr. Wayne, you can relax.
To relax is to be a victim.
I see. Looking over your history, I noticed that your collegiate career was cut short. You appear to be a highly intelligent, attractive, and driven individual. So why did you leave school?
Let's just say academia couldn't teach the lessons I needed to learn.
What about your friends, your social group? Didn't you feel that you would be missed, or more so, miss those close to you?
Those who get close to me get hurt. I'm self-sufficient.
Any collegiate organizations or hobbies with others that you shared?
Like I said, I had other things to learn.
Now, what about romantic relationships?
Always seemed like a waste of time.
I see. Did you find yourself butting heads with your fellow students in school?
There were a few headbutts.
Doctor's notes. Some telltale depression symptoms are on display. A consistent pattern of picking fights. He seems to have a sense of worthlessness and imposes these punishments upon himself, be that placing himself in horrible, violent situations or keeping himself from human interaction. Possible manifestations of survivor's guilt resulting in these self-punishments. His history speaks to depression and antisocial tendencies. He is withdrawn from those around him or the possibility of social pleasures. Meaningful relationships seem minimal. Perhaps self-sabotage? Believing himself undeserving of happiness and hope? Perhaps a fear of commitment and a freeing him from the possibility of losing loved ones again? He speaks nothing of normal, healthy, and appropriate interests or hobbies. He seeks only control and exalting his prowess and his other identity. Also must be noted, Mr. Wayne displays a blunted effect. He presents next to no feelings upon his face. His answers and emotions are flat. When I ask him of himself, he is measured and guarded, but I also sense a lack of clarity. One must also question if Mr. Wayne fully knows his own identity. Is this Bruce Wayne? Just a mask that he wears, never to be his vulnerable self and let his true feelings come out? Could you please speak to these conflicts?
Young people need to find themselves. Sometimes that happens through the Pythagorean theorem or Plato's Republic, others in pugilistics. On and on it goes.
But you appear to keep putting yourself in these situations. It says here that you are often fighting many people at a time. Also, these scuffles would occur again and again. Why, Mr. Wayne?
Fire hardens steel.
But fire also burns flesh and melts hearts.
Fire is a tool, not a toy.
Doctor's notes. On his path to becoming his other identity, he would routinely put himself in danger, situations where his basic needs are not being met, while also experiencing multiple stressors and dangers. Continuation of his chronic post-traumatic stress disorder as he keeps being traumatized. This big T trauma, the threat or knowledge witnessing of death, dismemberment, or bodily harm, was re-experienced and thought of as chronic. This re-traumatizing of himself could be an attempt to reassert control of the situation that he couldn't control as a child, and reclaiming of his narrative, putting himself in similar situations to be the hero that wasn't there when his parents died, and give him the ability to instill the fear that struck deep inside him. Now, after you left school, you traveled for a long time, and after that appears you lived on the street, that you involved yourself in criminal activities. Wouldn't you say that these were dangerous situations that a man of your status didn't need to involve himself in?
I needed to step away from, look, I was born with a silver spoon. And I wanted to see what it was like growing up with a plastic fork. I needed to see how the other half lives. Experience the mind of those who are forced by society into what we call the criminal element. That's the only way I could find the truth.
The truth? I see. Now, records here are spotty, but I can see some of the scars that are on your body. Did this come about during this time?
Blades, bullets, plenty of blunt force trauma. It happens when you're on this side of the law.
No schizophrenia nor delusional disorder appear present in Mr. Wayne. Nor does his leather-clad activities seem to predominantly be a sexual fetish, where he puts on the bat suit. He doesn't see himself as a different person, thus seemingly no signs of dissociative identity disorder. Now, Mr. Wayne, can I ask you about your nightly activities, about your times as the Batman? The Bat. It says that in your file it was chosen to, evoke fear in criminals. Is that correct?
They are a superstitious and cowardly lot. I wanted them to experience the fear that their victims feel. I wanted to inhabit their nightmares and terrorize their nights.
I see. Mr. Wayne, when you put on the costume, does the Batman take over?
Batman's a symbol. It strikes fear in those that deserve it and inspiration to the rest of Gotham that needs it. It's transcendent of humanity and corruptibility. The Batman, it's more bat than man. But no. Bruce Wayne is the Batman the way that Doc Samson is a psychologist. It's a different identity that I take on, letting a different part of me come forward, but I'm still me. I'm still in control.
Now, Mr. Wayne, when you put on the suit, do you find yourself aroused?
It shrinks. Do you understand? It shrinks. It's basically rubber. No, I don't find myself aroused, nor do I find the experience erotic. Go back to med school. That isn't to say I haven't met certain individuals on the job that intrigue me, but that's a cat of a different color.
Now, Mr. Wayne, when you have the suit on, when you are the Batman, would you say you find yourself attracted or drawn to other people of the animal persuasion? I see here in your file things about penguins and man bats, even a cat man. Is that something that comes up often? Is that something that you look for?
Let's move on.
Final notes. The poster boy for post-traumatic growth, the process of becoming stronger and developing new goals and beliefs through creating meaning from traumatic experiences. It is not uncommon for people to turn to social activism when dealing with such pain and loss. Mr. Wayne is a truly clever man. He seems to possess both a high intelligence and a high emotional quotient. Superheroes tend to be quite gifted people, so we can probably figure out a lot about them based on what we know from the science of giftedness. People who are truly selfless, who have given so much of themselves, are often confusing to the normal world, and thus we tend to look for the most cynical reasons of why they are so different. Not that they are greater than us, but perhaps they are damaged, and that is what makes them different. Mr. Wayne experienced something that is terrifying, but his decision to become the Batman gave his life meaning and purpose, a silver lining in his tragedy, something we can all hope for. Now, Batman may be the real personality, born and bred in tragedy. But by using this to drive himself to more, Bruce becomes the mask that he puts on during the day. Either way, I do hope Mr. Wayne procures the psychiatric help, therapy, or just talking to someone that he so desperately needs. Honestly, it's good for everyone. Be they Cape crime fighter or the general Joe or Jane, we all need help sometimes. And there's always the possibility he just might be bat nuts. Would you say that your actions have made the world a better place, Mr. Wayne?
In my experience, we live in two worlds, before and after. It's who we make ourselves after that defines us. I'll let history decide the rest.
Well, I see that
our time is up.
How observant, Mr. Wayne. Well, I appreciate your time and candor. I know that you are a busy man, but I would greatly enjoy more sessions with you if you would grant me the opportunity. I think there's some tremendous work and progress that we could make together. If you...
My nights are usually burdened with purpose, so we shall see. I've also been, so you know, in complete transparency, contacted by another such professional, a Dr. Strange.
Dr. Stephen Strange?
No. The gentleman to which I'm referring is a professor of psychiatry at Gotham State University.
Dr. Hugo Strange. I'm honestly not too sure why he's reaching out to me, but that's a fog I shall cut through on my return to Gotham.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Wayne, for coming all this way to New York.
I try to make it to the Cinderella City as often as I can.
You mean the Big Apple? Where exactly are you from, Mr. Wayne?
I'm the knight. Hey, we're stupid and we did this thing.
Gentlemen, let's broaden our minds.
Are they in the proper approach pattern for today?
Negative.
All the weapons! Now! Charge the lightning field!
Whoa, did you just hear that? That smells like a multiversal tape between Doc Samson and the Batman?
I didn't know that I'd recognize that smell.
Take a whiff. That's what it is.
We sure did. It's a whiff, all right.
Anyway.
Hey, that was from the multiverse.
Multiverse of our madness.
Yes, and by the way, and I should have brought this up during the DC multiverse episode. Having a dark multiverse is the stupidest thing I've ever heard in my life. You can't have separate multiverses because it's still a multiverse. That's what a multiverse is. A multiverse is multiple universes.
But what if we added more universes?
And they were hat on a hat on a hat on a hat.
Hey, that's how you keep your head warm.
Crisis on Infinite Hats.
Well, there's a hat A, hat B, hat C, hat Prime.
George Perez is rolling over in his grave.
Let's see what Wiki says. Wiki. Nope. Not dead yet. That's why we edit these together. No, he has pancreatic cancer, quote unquote, 6 months to live. So he will die.
Well, I think most of them will. Mark Miller's got Crohn's disease, man.
That's pretty shitty.
Listen, I got to get out of here.
Thanks, everybody. Hope you guys enjoyed. So, welcome back to Dispatch Ajax.
Hey, the show we do that no one listens to.
Yeah, well, somebody's gonna sometime.
In a different universe, somebody will listen
to
it.
In the dark multiverse, we're a hit. In some alternate universe, all our takes are the complete wrong thing to say.
I think you better double check, because I'm pretty sure that's this universe.
Nope, not gonna.
Fair enough. Not gonna double check the fabric of the universe.
Nope.
We're just gonna keep on rolling.
Nope, not checking my math. Moving on ahead. Give me a C, Teach. Move me along. So this episode, we like to talk about the Batman. And not necessarily the movie, The Batman, but we could if you like. But we want to talk about what you might have just heard, which is kind of the psychology of the different versions of The Batman in live action over the many years.
And for some reason, we thought that that necessitated inserting a Marvel Comics character into it.
Well, I didn't do it. I just found this tape. I gave it to you, and you put it in the magic box to turn it all digitized.
That's right. Serpico handed you this envelope with a tape in
hey,
it.
Hey, man. Do not throw him under the bus.
Attica! wait, no, is that right? Am I doing this right?
Not yet, but keep trying.
Woo-ah! It's a dog day afternoon, but is it a straw dog? I got nothing.
I know, and I was trying to like...
It's not Pacino, I know. It's a Hoffman, isn't it?
Yes, that is a Hoffman. And I think the remake was... Cyclops dude?
Yeah, it is James Marsterson.
Marsterson. Could you please put a little Marsterson sauce on my sandwich there?
They don't make that anymore. Don't use it. It's spoiled. I'm sorry. No Marstons. All we have is Dorothy Lynch and Stubbs.
Skip, what would you say has been your favorite?
If you were a tree, what type of Batman would you be?
If you like Batman.
If you dress up like a bat,
you might be a Batman. If you take young boys, train them to be deadly assassins, you just might be Ra's al Ghul.
If you project your childhood trauma on an innocent child, you just might be Batman.
If you do all of your pizzas into Batman shapes, you just might be Little Caesars.
If you stalk the night, bringing vengeance to criminals, you just might be a vigilante.
It's true.
That actually might be true, which is why we decided to tackle the psychology of one of the craziest characters in comics who, for some reason, were all okay with being crazy, unlike Legion or Moon Knight. Moon Knight being the pale imitation of Batman that Marvel puts out.
I get it. Pale imitation.
Hey! He's even a knight. That's crazy. So we decided to tackle why Batman does the things that he does and what makes him tick. And not just that cell phone that Joker sewed into his chest cavity.
He's the kind of guy that can't hear the train when it's 2 feet from the tracks.
They say he can't be killed. They say he drinks blood.
I say you're full of shit.
Nux.
Why don't you broadcast it? Now, we could really do this the whole episode, but nobody wants to hear that.
But guess what if you do?
Yeah, we have a Patreon. We will do the entire movie for you for circus peanuts, literally.
They're made of spider sugar. We'll do it like a Riff Trek style voiceover of the entire film. It would just be the same dialogue, but from memory and us.
I guess.
No, that would be kind of fun.
I know, because we've done it for free at parties.
I know. Now I just want to, like, literally put the movie on, and we'll just talk to each other, doing all of the lines.
Sure. We can make it a Twitch stream.
Oh, then they have to see our faces.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's that other guy that thinks he's JFK Jr. that only shoots from, like, the other direction.
You mean from the right into the front?
From the window to the wall.
God.
Not Vincent Fusco, the other one.
Johnny Skeet.
Apparently he's a formative character in your life, Jake. Some deep psychology here, which is a good example of why we're talking about the Batman.
Yes, the Batman. Which, again, it all depends on what version of the character we're talking about. The comics are very different from the live action, which is very different from the animated series. Depending on which writer, which era, it's kind of all over the place. And we're also applying the idea that there is innately something wrong with him. It could be that he is a decently psychologically fashioned individual that has taken the mantle upon himself to go above and beyond.
What kind of world do we live in where a man dresses up like a bat? Steals all my press.
I've been telling you, this podcast needs an enema.
This podcast is an enema.
But we wanted to take a look at the prevailing versions of this pop culture icon that have been heralding the airwaves as of late, namely The Batman, BVS. You have Michael Keaton coming back as his version of Batman in the upcoming Flash film. Spoilers, I guess.
Maybe, if that ever actually happens.
Yeah, it keeps getting pushed back. Maybe it's going so fast, we just keep missing it.
Oh, that's right. Maybe it dissolved into a being of pure light and energy, like in Christ's on Infinite Earths. It became a lightning bolt that went back in time and then created Batman 89.
You just blew my mind.
Yeah, I know.
Oh my God.
It just became a vision for young Sam Hamm.
Did you guys see that?
Guys, I think I'm going to write a Batman movie.
If you turn into a lightning bolt.
You might be Sam Hamm. For those of you who don't know, Sam Hamm wrote the script for Batman 89, but directed by, of course,
Mr. Tim Burton.
Tim Merkin.
Real hairy filmography there.
The guy that was fired from making Batman movies because of McDonald's. That's a resume builder for you.
Hey, McDonald's is a power player. Hey, maybe they're still friends. Anything's possible.
History will never know.
Yeah. I want to kind of take a look at them, they're old bat dudes.
For the most part, I think we can eliminate Batman 66. It's a parody of itself. It's a caricature.
Yeah, sure. There just isn't a whole lot of depth there.
And that was by design because of the McCarthy hearings and the seduction of the innocent. Boom! It's true, but we don't have to get into that now, but that's why.
You just got seduced.
You just got bruised, bitch.
Yeah, well, maybe let's go the diametrically opposed route from Adam West's version of Batman to the Robert Pattinson Batman, which I think we can probably easily say is the darkest, emoest, most broodiest Batman.
I'll say emoest. I don't know if it's the darkest.
Okay.
Do you mean hard to see? Then yes. Do you mean tonally? That's debatable, because a lot of the Nolan stuff is pretty dark.
That's odd, because that's not where I thought you were going to go with that.
Oh, you thought I was going to go BVS?
Yeah, I thought you were going to go the Batfleck.
Well, that's not what I mean when I say you have to define dark, because if you mean by dark, he murders a bunch of people because Zack Snyder doesn't understand how Batman works, then yeah, that is pretty dark. Where he brands child molesters so that they get murdered in prison, pretty dark. Not Batman, but pretty dark.
It is dark. And you know what? If you'd like, we can just move to that version of the Batman.
Well, okay, if we're going to do this, then I it's fair to start with that one because it's so, like, out of the norm. But I think if you're going to do that, you have to start with the first two modern Batmans. Because believe it or not, everybody thinks the superhero movie bubble is going to burst, and it might, and probably will. But the thing that's universal is Superman and Batman movies are always being made and have been since Superman and Batman were first characters. Right after the comics came out, Batman movies were being made. There were Batman versions we're not going to talk about because I've never seen them and I don't know any of those actors' names.
Yeah, me neither.
Hell, did you know there's a Hispanic guy that played Superman in like the 40s?
I am aware of that.
No matter what, those movies are always going to be made. So there's a lot to talk about. But I think if you really want to begin with modern Batman, I think you have to go with Tim Burton's Batman / Batman the Animated Series.
So you start with Keaton, which is totally fine.
I would imagine you start with Keaton. It's a little shallow, but Batman the Animated Series directly came out of the hype for that movie.
Yes, yes, but we're not going to talk about any of the animated. This is just live action talk. I think if you want to get into the psychology of Batman, probably the animated series might have the most complex.
And in fact, the movie, the silver screen version of Batman the Animated Series, Mask of the Phantasm, is one of the best versions of diving into his psychology, especially in his early beginnings.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
It's a fantastic film, and it's a phantasmic film, and it's it does a really good job of talking about why he is who he is. Is Batman the Animated Series the consummate Batman interpretation ever?
Personally, for me, yes. It's tough if you're bringing everything to the table with the comics and whatnot. There are some good runs, some good series, some good arcs.
Sure. I mean, peak Silver Age Batman is probably Denny O'Neill, Neil Adams. That's when you get World's Greatest Detective stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They take the character seriously. And I think that directly inspires people to make the movies, which then inspires Batman the Animated Series, which then defines the character for generations thereafter. And everybody's basically trying to play catch up to not only reach the baseline of Batman the Animated Series, but then break new ground, which rarely happens, but somehow did in the Pattinson one.
They decided to take a different track with post-Nolan... Or, like, pre-Nolan, really.
Right, exactly. They're just repeating what Denny O'Neill and Neil Adams did in the 70s, essentially. He's essentially a 70s Batman come to life in a way that is palatable. People have spent so much time running away from Batman 66 and running away from Adam West and running away from the 50s rainbow Batman stuff to have the character be taken seriously again like it was intended to be in the 30s and early 40s, because when they introduced Robin, it was all kind of downhill from there for a while. Basically, the Pattinson movie says, what's so wrong with these old archetypes about Batman? Let's stop running away from it. Let's embrace it and make it good. And I think is why that movie succeeds.
That's an interesting point of view.
Instead of people thinking that he's a supernatural creature that stalks the night, him just like showing up at crime scenes and cops letting him like defile their investigation and ruin. Good luck prosecuting that crime.
Yeah.
The Keaton Batman tries to establish early on is that people are afraid of him because they think he's some otherworldly thing. In this, they just were like, well, okay, let's assume that everyone knows he's just some dude, but that shouldn't keep you from being f-ing terrified of him.
Yeah.
In fact, they beat you over the head with it in the first 25 minutes. Like an usher comes in with a maglite flashlight and beats you over the head with this movie.
I mean, literally, they show you why you should be so afraid of him. Yeah, you substitute the supernatural for the peak in anti-humanitarian, law-abiding citizenry.
Yeah, it's sort of like a death wish kind of character who doesn't kill people, essentially.
You know, I read this quote from Pattinson and he talked about that. I pictured him like this from the moment we practiced the first fight. It seemed more fun to me. Something inside him would just want to slit the guy's throat. I told myself that he spends his nights chasing criminals. There's no way he can't find pleasure in it. He suffers at the same time. It is a desire that overwhelms him.
I think it's fair, especially for early Batman. That's something people also have been running away from, because in every other version, you either see Batman's origin or you see him. He's already been doing this for a long time. This is the first Batman year two movie.
Mm-hmm.
Literally year two, except he doesn't carry a gun.
No, he carries those interesting Talon-esque darts on his
the gauntlet things he has.
Yeah. That was fascinating.
And he only uses once in the movie, which is kind of weird because he uses his other tools like a lot. Not in a bad way. I actually like them embracing him using his gadgets. Electroshock and the grappling gun and the smoke bombs and the venom and all that stuff, you know? They really embrace Batman lore in this in a way that rarely movies do. Even the Nolan ones don't embrace his lore that way. They invent new lore.
Yeah, they're also doing plenty of new stuff. The melting the gun down to be his symbol that he then uses.
Is that true, though? I thought that was just like a fan rumor.
I've seen things stating both ways, so I don't know which it is.
The Pattinson costume is fascinating because, A, it's not completely black. When I first saw the production stuff, seeing the bat symbol being so weird and mechanical, and you're like, why? You know, and I think that's where fans started getting that and being like, oh, maybe it's the gun. But then it turns out, actually, it's just his batarang, which is actually awesome. They brought something new to the table. Great, let's do it.
Batman director Matt Reeves has confirmed that the symbol on Robert Pattinson's batsuit is not crafted from the gun that killed Bruce Wayne's parents.
Because he doesn't know who killed his parents. If he had the gun, they'd find the guy. Another good thing about that movie, for a while when I'm watching it, they're like, oh, they're going to say that Carmine Falcone killed his... Nice sales guy, say Falcone, I don't care. Oh, he killed the Waynes, or the other mob boss killed the Waynes. And you're like, well, either way, you're getting into one of the biggest problems with Batman psychology early on in the modern interpretation of that, of course, is Tim Burton's version where the Joker killed Bruce Wayne's parents, which makes it a revenge story, thus negating his entire motivation as a character.
Mm-hmm.
It's the exact same problem you had with Tom Jane's Punisher. If you know the guy that killed your family and then you become a vigilante and you go and you kill that guy, why the f*** are you a vigilante now? You did it. You can rest now.
The psychological jump from being revenge to turning revenge into vengeance for all crimes when you have personally destroyed that personification? Yeah, I don't. Mm-hmm. It's a tough road to hoe there.
One thing we can establish early on, I think, with good Batman stories is that even if he knows who killed his family, and Nolan does a really good job of this. We know Joe Chill or Joseph Chilton, depending on which era.
I think it was Charlton. I think
Charlton Comics.
Mm-hmm.
Captain Atom as the Monarch killed his father.
Take that, Mr. Wayne!
In 2001. The idea that every criminal he fights is the guy that killed his parents. Either you do it like Nolan does, he can't get revenge on that guy because of the system around him. So who's really at fault? Or he doesn't know who actually killed his parents, and so every criminal he busts is the guy that killed his parents, sort of like as a proxy. Same with the Punisher. They have different methods, but they have very similar motivations. That's a very important thing to establish when you're talking about Batman psychology. Otherwise, his character doesn't make sense. Why would you dress up like a flying rat, go around and bust heads if you know the guy, you caught the guy, he's in jail, and you're a rich playboy? Unless it's a fetish, why do you still dress up in rubber and go out and crack skulls? Well, that's where we get into Joel Schumacher territory.
Yeah, which is when I was taking notes psychologically about different characters. It got really difficult with George Clooney's version of Batman. There's nothing there.
There's nothing there.
He's not even the Batman character anymore.
On the surface, does he make a good Bruce Wayne aesthetically? Yes, absolutely. He's kind of a fake playboy persona, which I think George Clooney does to a T. But who gives a shit? I don't care. Why is he dressing in rubber and grooming a young child? We can pretty much excise both the Val Kilmer and George Clooney Batmans, I think, from this scenario.
I think there's stuff to be said about the Val Kilmer one.
Really?
Well, for one, the film is kind of all about the psychology of Batman.
But you mean because there's a hot psychologist in it?
Well, a lot of the stuff that's really interesting about Batman psychology with that level is actually in the deleted scenes. Where, like, Val Kilmer...
This is where we're going with it?
Well, we're getting to the true intent behind Joel Schumacher's Batman. His real motivation. His real motivation was he saw Batman 66 and wanted to put a bunch of neon in it.
This is true. I think it's wildly misguided. Other than, like, for having fun and making a bunch of money, there is a point where all of his other characters feel like they have no choice, but it's him owning being Batman and choosing to be Batman at the end of that film, taking that burden on himself, trying to guide Robin to not be him.
Then why did he groom him? If he really is just taking in these waifs, these kids that have gone through the same thing he did, is he not just recreating himself by turning them into crime-fighting vigilantes? If he was a healthy person doing this, why would he take a child that went through the same thing he did, that he's trying to prevent other children from going through by being Batman, and then turn them into him if he's a healthy, adjusted person?
Well, if he's a healthy, adjusted person who sees himself as not having a problem,
he's not Batman, right?
Well,
this is the framework by which you have to judge Bruce Wayne Batman in general. Bruce Wayne went through a horrible trauma, defined his life. You can go out on a limb and say Bruce Wayne died the night his parents died, and everything else is reactionary. And so in that context, his whole motivation is to prevent the same thing that happened to his parents happening to someone else. When you throw Robin into the mix, it gets really bizarre because he sees a kid who literally went through the same thing he did. Hey, I know what you're going through. Let me make sure that you don't become me. And then immediately turns them into him.
Yes. I mean, there's another way of looking at it. I see what I could have become, something like the Punisher. And maybe he's trying to say, hey, I have the skills and means to guide you onto a path that is more righteous.
But does he have a right to do that to a 13-year-old boy?
I'm not saying it's right. I'm just saying in a way that
super messed up.
Yes, it's wrong.
Really unethical and immoral, I think.
I think he's taking away a lot of the choice and the ability for that child to develop and become a fully fledged, functional adult.
Would Dick Grayson have become a vigilante?
Not a chance.
Without Batman? No way. Jason Todd, maybe. He might have become a serial killer. We don't know. Bruce didn't do a very good job with that on any level.
Well, I mean, that also gets into the Batman being the Ouroboros for crime. By stopping crime, he creates crime.
Yeah, which is something, again, that the Pattinson movie does very well in saying, like, you can take a look at that movie and say, Riddler's manipulating him the entire time. Even where you think he's being honest, he's manipulating Bruce into doing things. If Bruce doesn't do what he does, if he's not Batman doing these things, none of those people would die. Maybe Riddler kills a couple of corrupt people, but every horrible event, the flooding, the mass killings... In fact, one of the reasons it's genius to use Riddler this way is Riddler wouldn't have set up these traps if he didn't know that Bruce was going to do something stupid to cause these people to die. You take away the things that Batman does in that movie, those people probably live. And on top of that, if Bruce Wayne isn't the symbol of inequity of wealth distribution in America, there is no Joe Chill shooting his fucking rich parents on the street for money.
Well, on a greater socioeconomic scale... Wealth versus crime. Yes, but that's quite the big...
Hey, that's part of it. Now, maybe we're not there yet. I would like to see a Marxist take on Batman. A real one, not Superman Red Sun, where it's just kind of a plot device. If he were really the guy that he thinks he is, he'd be, I don't know, Che Guevara or something instead of Batman or something. Noam Chomsky instead of Batman.
Huh, I don't know how that would work.
I don't know, but I'm saying it would be an interesting way to look at it. An actual leftist look. Obviously, one of the reasons Batman is intriguing today still is because of the social inequities that exist in society and the things that have happened over the last 40, 50 years when it comes to socioeconomics in America. Early on, we want to root for him because he's rich. We have a distrust in the system, but maybe a guy who is the American dream, rich and handsome and successful... who went through trauma, maybe he's the only righteous one out there because he's the capitalist. He's the one that made it. He's the what we're supposed to achieve in a McCarthy-era America.
Something we all can strive for.
Right, exactly. The shining beacon on a hill. But then later, when it's very obvious that trickle-down economics don't work, crime is mostly because of social and economic inequity. because Joe Chill didn't kill people for fun. He killed his parents for money because he's poor and he lives in a cycle of poverty and violence. And that a lot of that comes from wealthy industrialists and defense contractors and people who run cities, corrupt politicians and rich people who influence the wheels of power, control the levers of economic opportunity, the myth of equal opportunity in America. There's really no non-Marxist way to look at Batman. If you really want to talk about critique, you have to talk about sociopolitics. We can build to that, and maybe we won't ever get to it in this episode. He's changed over the years because our attitudes about those types of things have changed. Nowadays, when you watch movies about Batman, we don't celebrate that he's rich. That's usually the motivation of other people to hate him and why he has to do something other than just being a rich guy donating to charities in late-stage capitalism. Guys like that are why we're in the situation we are, you know? It's like Jeff Bezos being like, I want to use all my money for good and save the world and save the environment by using all these rockets to send rich people to space, which destroy the f***ing environment, and then, you know, exploiting workers in my warehouse. I guarantee you Jeff Bezos thinks he's Batman. You know what? I bet he dresses up like Batman.
Well, I could see that. Bruce has the courage of his convictions, and he's willing to get down and dirty. I think Bezos and current real-life billionaires, that's all just talking points. And giving money to the Humane Society or whatever, they don't care about that. That's drops in the bucket. But at least Bruce takes it literally into his own hands to try and do something about it. Now, maybe it's completely batshit, pun intended, way to go about affecting change. It's something he can grapple with, you know, on a one-to-one basis, but it doesn't affect the totality of the system that is still creating these criminals.
Elon Musk thinks he's doing the world good by making electric cars. Well, the guy made his fortune with blood emeralds.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's not cool. And then also his business practices and the resources they use to build those batteries, the environmental impact of SpaceX, those are the opposite of doing good for the world. They're actively contributing to the problem.
Yeah, but I mean, that's also taking his what he says on face value. I don't think he truly gives a shit about the environment at all. That's marketing.
I think he and Bezos both think they're good guys. Because how would you live with yourself otherwise?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of those people out there. I don't think they care. I think they're beyond normal human morality, you might say. They think they're far above that. They don't see themselves as good or bad. They're just them.
But there is the American mindset, especially during the Cold War, of what I'm doing by being a billionaire. Well, actually, throughout the history of America in general, what I'm doing, making all this money, is correct. The right, righteous thing to do. Pulling myself up my Batman bootstraps and I'm...
Batstraps.
There you go. I'm doing what all Americans should be doing, and this is what America's about, is that you have the ability to come from nothing and make yourself something, which is a myth, because somewhere down the line, you f*** somebody else over. America had all those opportunities and all that land and all that stuff because they used slave labor, they killed and relocated native peoples, they exploited Chinese cheap labor or indentured servants, or they had dangerous practices. Read anything by Upton Sinclair, and he'll tell you.
Used old money to take all of this and just keep going.
What about robber barons? We don't want Bruce Wayne to be a Rockefeller, even though that's his original archetype. Bruce Wayne to work, and what they kind of like try and lean into in a lot of 50-plus years of Batman continuity, is that he's a reluctant rich person. He knows he has to do what he does, he thinks. And he can't do what he does without that money. But he also hates the fact that he has that money, because the fact that he has that money is one of the reasons he has to be Batman. So, yeah, you're right. It's an Ouroboros of socio-political and socio-economic inequity and unfairness. They do address that a little bit in The Batman. Oh, yeah, he can go out and crack heads. But is that better than going out and saving people? Because there's no black and white villain. And here I go again, but that's one of the things that the McCarthy hearings demanded comic books do in the first early Superman comics. Superman broke the arm of a wife beater. Batman beat the shit out of a corrupt foreman of a mining operation because he was abusing his workers. So the government was like, that sounds like a commie to me. So they forced comic books to write villains that didn't have real life motivations. That's where you get Lex Luthor. That's where you get the Joker. They're not actually villains of real ills in society, but cartoonish caricatures. If you really want to tell these stories the way that they're meant to be told and make it make sense, you kind of have to go back to their origins in that sense. If you really want to look at it from Detective Comics 27 up until probably the early to mid-40s, Bruce Wayne, he's a rich guy who knows that rich people are f***ing over the working man, and he's trying to do his best to balance that out. He's not fighting purse snatchers. He's fighting corrupt politicians and industrialists who are screwing people over. Now we're finally getting back to telling that story because it's no longer taboo anymore. And so, you know, f*** it, let's go bowling, man.
You're not wrong, just an a- I'm enjoying this much more than anything else we had planned. Who cares about the psychology? I like this train of thought. It's a difference between basic mental processes and the larger socioeconomic drivers, what makes him do what he does, or what puts him in a position to do what he does.
Yeah, I don't think you can extricate one from the other.
I think a lot of times the way Batman is written, I think you could put him in the sewer, Rorschach style, and he'd still do the same thing. They kind of focus more on his PTSD, his antisocial behavior, his depression. I mean, it's a lot of that's already in the thing.
Why don't you outline some of the things, assuming Bruce Wayne's a real person, let's say. Why does he do what he does?
I would say that he has this traumatic event which has changed his life. He has made a promise to himself to kind of embrace his survivor's guilt and weaponize it. In doing so, embraced his antisocial personality disorder, his self-sabotage. Mm-hmm. You know, he wants to disassociate in a way from the life that he could have into this life that is tortured and relentless. He has a deep fear of commitment. He wants to turn that same fear and powerlessness upon itself and take that PTSD and turn it on those he deems are the criminal element. You know, I think there's a lot of depression in there.
Of course.
There's a lot of obsessive compulsive tendencies.
So if you really boil it down, Bruce Wayne does what he does because of anger, right? Anger over the loss of his parents, anger over the loss of a childhood, anger over a life he'll never have.
I think at least to start, I think, yes. It's say the end of most of these films, most of the arcs of Batman, it is a kind of reactionary. Turning that anger, wielding it into a weapon, but once you get to a certain point, then it's the vengeance versus hope version of Batman. He doesn't use it to extend his anger out, but to use that turmoil
as a tool.
As a tool, but not in a rage-filled kind of way.
Otherwise, he'd be the Punisher.
Yes, or bring this home in a way, Ben Affleck's Batman, where he's essentially he's become the villain. Mm-hmm. I think they're...
And everyone's okay with that, apparently.
Yeah, well, I think that's one reason why it resonates with a certain audience and completely doesn't for another, because he is set up as the villain in these weird black and white terms, completely loses the sight of what the Batman is. And I think
you're giving it a little too much credit.
Well, what I'm saying is that there's a certain audience that wants Batman to be the Punisher, and so when they see that, they wholeheartedly embrace it. And I think there's a big chunk of us who say that's completely antithetical to who and what Batman is, no matter what trajectory you're putting him on psychologically. Even if the name Martha is supposed to be some type of redemptive arc, he has lost sight of what his true purpose was, what his parents meant to him.
Instead of just cheap writing.
Even if you want to go with it, it's still wrong for the character, which is why we hate it. And it doesn't work for us.
Even if you listen to interviews with Zack Snyder, people ask him, why does Batman kill so many people? And he's like, oh, you're fooling yourself if you don't think Batman kills people. You don't know what Batman is.
Yeah.
Go write a Punisher movie then. That's what makes Batman not only enduring, sociopolitics aside, the idea that instead of just using that anger to beat the shit out of people, yeah, there is a demographic that's like, well, they're criminals, so yeah, why shouldn't they be beaten?
Yeah, why shouldn't you brand them?
What makes Batman Batman in that sense is when he realizes that there's more to the story than, okay, this guy snatched this lady's purse. Why did he snatch this lady's purse? Why is he in that situation where he feels like that's necessary? Instead of just being like, oh, he's a bad guy. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Again, you look at a character like the Joker and what he was in the late 30s into the 40s. Mm-hmm. He's a legit cartoon character that puts bombs with smiley faces on them. And then you try to figure out a way to, after 50 years, how do we make this make any type of sense? These complete cartoon characters that work for like an Adam West version in that world. But when you try to give them real motivation, you kind of really have to stretch things.
You're right. Why they still resonate interest in audiences instead of just feeling like it's recycled over and over again is because, and this is just supposition, we're not actual psychologists or sociologists, we just studied it in college. Originally they introduced characters like the Joker and the Riddler because the government said, dumb this down, this is for kids, don't let them question authority or the fabric of our society. Yes, they were supposed to be flat and two-dimensional. And then when you get into the 70s, especially, when serial killers become a phenomenon, you get to that thing where not only are clowns killing people in real life, but people don't understand the motivations of people like Manson or Gacy or Dahmer or Bundy. It seems so completely antithetical to do things that they do. Suddenly, those characters don't seem so crazy anymore. Suddenly, there is a guy that is a clown, an actual clown, that murders young boys. Ted Bundy, the nice guy who worked on all these Republican political campaigns, straight up beats and murders women that he meets randomly. On one level, people feel like they need something like the Batman, even if it's just in literature or whatever, as a baseline of morality to combat these things that they just do not understand. I mean, that's why you have Sherlock Holmes. That's why you have chivalric knights in Arthurian legend by the, yeah, not the original stuff, but, you know, like later on when the French started writing it. And unfortunately, during the 70s and 80s, you kind of got that conservative pushback against this, the Willie Horton phenomenon. You're very right about it being reactionary. But when people sort of realize that it's overly simplistic, then Batman rings true again because he has a set of ethics and morals that go against that sort of Reaganite fear-mongering, that Nixonite fear-mongering, where it's like, that guy's evil, he's a criminal, let's kill him. Because eventually you have to be like, well, you know, like the West Memphis 3, Donald Trump wanted the death penalty for the Central Park 5. Turns out they were innocent, and they were railroaded by the cops who were looking for a scapegoat.
Well, it might be the reason why there shouldn't be a death penalty in the first place, is that, you know, who are you to deal out, you know, death?
The one time you're wrong is why the whole thing doesn't not fair and not equitable. Batman remains, I think, throughout every era of American panic or just American anxiety, rings true to a lot of people, or is at least an intriguing mirror up to society. People need something like Batman. It fulfills that idea of revenge and vengeance and makes us feel better about ourselves because, even in that scenario, there's somebody who's just good enough to not be evil. Mm-hmm. He represents justice and not revenge. The Punisher is revenge. The Punisher is self-defeating in his own way. Batman is the opposite, with the same motivation. Sorry, that was a rant. I guess this is what my point is. Yeah, he does fulfill that for people. But then he also represents the moral and ethical baseline that we need as a society to survive. Otherwise, we're just killing each other in the streets and we live in some sort of authoritarian nightmare. He's the anti-Nazi.
At least until, like, latter Frank Miller.
Yeah, exactly. He's the evil Jimmy Buffett.
It's racist o'clock somewhere.
Never gonna not think about that now.
So, yeah.
We could do this for 8 hours or stop.
Yeah, I think the last little bit is at some point, Batman becomes less about vengeance and more about hope and inspiration. A sign of fear in those that deserve it, but a symbol of hope for those that need it.
I don't think you could be fear and hope. I don't see how you could be both. Superman is hope. Oh, well. Batman is...
Yeah, but Superman's never fear.
Exactly.
I think the idea is that Batman is to be feared only by those that need to fear him. It's something that Superman can't ever have.
You can aspire to be Superman. You can never be Superman. If you want to aspire to be Batman, even though you're just a regular person, you're not going to be a millionaire.
But nobody knows he's a millionaire. It's a desire to have the hope for a better city that Batman provides.
I think you're right. I think it's a hope for justice. I don't think it's a hope for hope. I don't think it's a hope for better humanity. Because if the world was a better place, Superman would exist because he fights things that we can't do anything about. Batman fights things that are everyday problems that if the world weren't so sh**, wouldn't exist. If Batman were hope, Batman wouldn't exist. You know what I mean? People who don't understand Batman think he's the avatar of vengeance, and people who do understand realize that he's the thin line between vengeance and justice.
Yeah.
Problem solved. Somebody called Vanilla Ice.
I'm not sure that Ninja Rap is our goal here. Or is it?
They did come up with that song and that dance routine spontaneously and somehow did it in synchronous, so.
And then it all spontaneously combusted.
If we could have the problem-solving skills of Vanilla Ice sent back in time to feudal Japan, I think the world would be a better place. Think about it.
Do I have to?
Yeah, this is my decree.
Do you hear that, everybody? You all have
homework. I'm authoritarian Batman, and now you have to...
We want 2 pages, single-spaced, why Vanilla Ice and feudal Japan would make the world a better place. Now, Vanilla Ice, that's a symbol of hope.
And Suge Knight is the Joker. what does that make R. Kelly?
Well, his name isn't Knight. That doesn't count.
I don't know, that should be the criteria. Wait. I thought we were just going like 90s hip-hop.
Oh, no. I went straight Knight, Knight to Knight.
You went Marvel Knights. I get it. I know.
Okay, maybe neither of us is well right now.
Maybe we're batshit nuts like Batman. Yeah. Well, anyway, so that's our show.
If you want to, it would be cool if you know, like, share, subscribe. Leave us, a 4-bat symbol review on the BatTunes or whatever podcatcher that you dig on.
Podcatcher, the worst DC superhero of all time. And if you disagree with this or agree with this, why don't you just hit us up on Twitter? We'll yell at you. That's fine. We have no problem about yelling at each other. We'll yell at you.
You're wrong.
Or totally right, and I love it.
Why would you be my best friend?
Actually,
now?
I think you just summed up Twitter in general. that's Facebook and Twitter right there.
Yeah, pretty much. Well, Facebook needs a little more, like, you're wrong because Gematria and you said so.
And JFK Jr. might be Bruce Wayne.
Twitter is, you're very wrong and you should die.
I'm not going to back it up with any facts or reason, but take my hot take and run with it.
Bruce Wayne is Q. I'm sorry, I'm trying to apply logic to this and it's derailing it at the starting point.
Yeah, just like Q.
My brain just might not be poisoned enough to make this happen.
You got
to
swallow that pill, baby.
Oh.
The jagged red little pill.
I need to get black suit pilled is what
black
I need.
Black suit pilled. Bat pilled.
Bat pilled.
And that's much like Batman.
If you involved in the talks while you're solving mysteries,
you might be on acid.
Full circle. Yeah. All right.
Okay.
Good night, everybody.
Get out of here.
No, say your line.
Get out of my house. Oh. Who let you in here?
Who let said dogs out?
Thank you guys for tuning in, obviously. And like Jake said, rate and review us, follow us, because we're just yelling at each other and not the void that is podcasting. Don't forget to subscribe. Don't forget to support your local comic shops and retailers. And from Dispatch Ajax, we'd both like to say Godspeed.
Remember, no matter where you go,